Attention, brothers and sisters. Take a look around. We are killing the future.
Welcome to Tennessee Fully Exposed. I am Melanie Sinclair, along with John Stein.
Who's broke and homeless.
Who's broke and homeless, yeah, right. And the fabulous Tim Clay.
At least I am identified with identification.
Yeah, speaking of, you were telling us that you are a now proud member of the federal government's checklist of who's door to knock on, card carrying member of what now? What are you? You just got some sort of license, and that was your license to carry?
Yeah, the only piece of identification that I currently have. See, I had a little issue Sunday. I was drinking and riding, and which on private property is totally legal in this state, y'all, so don't get all bent.
Drinking and riding horses?
Yeah, it was a horse. Thank God the horse has more sense than I do, and I should get the horse to carry my wallet for me, because unfortunately I dropped it somewhere out in the woods, and I have nothing left. I have no driver's license, no credit cards, no nothing, but the bright spot. I received in the mail my freshly renewed and newly issued Tennessee handgun carry permit. So that means I do have...
Yay.
That's right. I do have one piece of government-issued photo ID.
Wow. Well, welcome to America.
And you know, there's...
welcome back to America.
There's nothing better than writing a check and they ask you for an ID and you hand them that thing. You get respect.
Yeah, here's my carry permit.
Did you know that when you show them your handgun carry permit, when they ask to see your firearm, you are entitled to say no, and they can't do squat. Even though every officer will almost always ask to see your handgun carry permit.
Uh-huh.
I read an article on that. They are not... You do not have to comply, and they cannot.
Really? Because they know before they get to you. If they pull you over, they know before they get to your car that you have a carry permit or not.
Shoot. They suck you out of your vent of your car dashboard if you remotely don't comply.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would imagine if I was a police officer and I checked records real quick before I walked up to the car and I saw handgun carry permit, I would actually breathe easier because I know this is somebody who is willing to say, yes, I'm carrying a gun, and yes, I've taken classes in using that handgun, and yes, everybody knows I've got that handgun, and therefore I'm a hell of a lot less likely to use it on that officer. Whereas when he goes up to a car and they don't have anything like that, and they look the slightest bit suspicious, I'd be a hell of a lot more nervous.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. You know, I was reading an interesting topic the other day. I actually started researching it because I just couldn't believe it to be true. But the Supreme Court actually has ruled many, like 110 years ago, something like that, that you, as an American citizen, may not be required. In other words, they're not allowed to require you to be licensed to operate any carriage, whether horse-drawn or mechanical, according to the ruling.
Semi.
That tells you how long ago this was.
Uh-huh.
Either horse-drawn or mechanical, unless it's for commercial use.
Really?
So, according to the Supreme Court, we are not supposed to be required to have driver's license.
Well, how long ago was this ruling made, and what has changed that
transpired
regulation?
Probably some federal something or other.
Well, no, technically nothing's changed it other than, you know,
we comply.
Time. Yeah, I mean, just
it's
time.
Like the TSA line.
In other words, no husband, one has challenged this law.
Well, let me tell you, my husband just flew to San Diego, and he said he was the only one in line for a pat down.
Well, that just makes sense. He's suspicious looking, and he limps.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that he kind of looks like he would work for the CIA. He looks kind of like a narc. We actually cleared out a bar on our honeymoon, in St. John's. We honeymooned over there, and I went to the local bar, and literally the bar cleared out when John walked in, and they sent somebody over to ask me if he was, CIA, FBI.
I love it.
ATF. They're like, yeah, milking me. I'm like, no, he's my husband.
He is. Now give us free drinks or we're going to raid you, blow you up with a drone.
Hey, man, right. This guy, is he like DEA? What?
Yeah, they were going to the whole alphabet, you know. What is he? You know, I know. He's my husband.
He's a J-O-H-N.
Yeah. Well, I think St. John's had been too long since they had been busted for some sort of drug ring when we got married. I don't know, maybe it'd been 10 years, 5 years. I don't know what they had a huge drug.
You don't know how long you've been married?
No. When the drug sting happened prior to us getting married.
Now, Tim, what did you say that when they walked in and they asked her all this stuff and she said, no, he's my John?
Yeah, right. Just don't say poor to John, then he won't get upset. No. It was actually kind of bizarre. St. John's, which is over by St. Thomas, it was raided, by, FBI, CIA,
That's interesting because it's a British territory.
Well, no, that's American. The British Isles is...
St. Thomas is American. St. John's is British. That's why...
Right.
Is St. John's British?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was American. I don't know why I thought it was American.
I couldn't go.
That was so long ago.
I know.
Anyway, they said at this bar that there had been boats parked out in the harbor for 20, 30 years that never moved. And they got word that it was being raided, and all of a sudden these boats that hadn't moved in 20-something years all of a sudden disappeared.
Very slowly, and I'm sure, so, with all the barnacles.
Right, then I show up with my husband who looks like he's FBI. They're like,
perfect.
Everybody's ready to head for the high seas. Anyway, so we got an interesting show today. I guess we really kind of want to do an array of things.
Got a lot going on here in Tennessee.
Yeah, we do. We have Dave Ramsey leaving Cumulus Cromwell 99.7, which was my old radio station. I actually went and attended Dave Ramsey's kind of kickoff party. He sent me an invite because I was a fellow co-host at the time.
Well, you leave and nobody else wants to hang around. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. The party's over when I leave.
Absolutely.
It arrives when I arrive. Right. So, anyway, Dave Ramsey... I know he knows of me, but we really never sat down and never really spoke. But I used to tell him, say on air all the time, I was a poster child for Dave Ramsey. I did not like controlling my finances and needed his help all the way. But I thought it was very interesting that he's going to an independent station, WTRKT 102.5, The Game. And that's owned by Bud Walters. So it kind of, I don't know, for me, having been in that little radio world, kind of wonder what's happening to Cumulus and Cromwell over at 99.7 that they would lose Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey's huge.
Well, he was pretty much their big, big thing, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, George Plaster used to be the big thing for 99.7. And I know George... And I see him every 5 years or so, or at some random party, and I'll come up and say, do you remember me?
Mm-hmm.
But he worked on it. He worked on the George Plaster show, which was in the afternoons, and I was in there at 3 o'clock in the morning doing research for a 5:45, in the morning. So really, when I saw him, it was really in passing. And but you know who your team is. So, so it used to be George Plaster, and now, and they really screwed George Plaster over, I do believe. Gaylord was owning it at that point in time. George Plaster made WTN money, And they should have given him a little bit more credibility. And they really I don't know, maybe he became too godly for them.
Mm-hmm.
But
from what I've heard, that's – I mean, I don't know George personally. But the George, feedback I get is that he is very
– meticulous.
Controlling and believes – if he's not the center of attention, he doesn't want other personalities on air with him.
Yeah, he's – and I like George. I really do. He's very unique, however, if you take a look at it, 99.7 was one of Gaylord's play toys. They kept it afloat. They didn't. It was up to the talent to make it the money. They weren't going to put any more money into this play toy than Gaylord had to.
Oh, my God. I can't believe they did have something that had to be self-supporting. That's awful.
No, yeah, exactly. and that's what George Plaster did. I mean, he put him on the map, you know, with sport. And I'm not a big sports person.
Right.
I don't really, you know, yeah, I really never listened to him, but I do know him. But anyway, so go back to Dave Ramsey. He's gone to an independent station, which is very interesting in the world of finance. I was wondering how long he would actually last, because both Republicans and Democrats really push the credit card industry. And Dave Ramsey, I always kind of felt that he was kind of an oxymoron for that sort of economic poli-sci view. We've become such an anti-cash society, and Dave Ramsey really pushes cutting up those credit cards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so really, if you look at it, it was almost like the, you know, it very contradictory. And I wondered how he was going to survive and how he survived so long, and he's become huge. Fox News is as bad as they are. It's the only one I can even stomach out there in media. They have Dave Ramsey all the time on. He's become huge.
Let me ask you this, because you were in radio for many years. What happens? He is syndicated in hundreds and hundreds of markets, maybe even thousands, I don't know. But he's at least in hundreds of markets across the country. What happens now that he goes to an independent station? Does he lose that syndication?
No. Actually, it'll be yes. It's probably the ACC versus the SEC. He's leaving the SEC going towards the ACC. Take a look at it as that lineup. But I will say this about talk radio.
Oh, so he's batting for the other team now. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
There's a news story.
Look at Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney owns a lot of the talk radio stations in the United States.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're rhinos. I mean, this is not, you know, these are not true. They're Republican in name only. Rhino.
Ah.
But I will say this about how talk radio has changed, which is very interesting. It used to be that they would have, you know, local talent come on, like me. I mean, I was drawn out of the radio world doing, like, advertisement, this, that, and the other, brought on and given, part-time on a morning show because I had a lot of co-hosts. And then I was given my own show on Saturday mornings. And this is a four-hour show. I mean, we're doing a one-hour show now. If you can imagine sitting here talking for 4 hours and actually having to make a point.
I can't imagine making anyone sit and listen to me for 4 hours. That would be cruel and unusual punishment.
I can't imagine Melanie being able to make points for 4 hours.
That's it.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, you know, your worst day on air, nobody calls. I mean, and then it's like you might as well just go over and pick up the telephone and start talking all by yourself. I mean, that's your worst day on air. But anyway, I digress. So with the talk radio industry, what they're doing now is that local talent has to buy their way on to air. You have to bring in the advertisers that are going to pay for your existence to be able to have a one-hour show.
And
Dave Ramsey and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Rush Limbaugh, they are all syndicated. So what these radio stations do is they turn around and say, all right, I'm going to buy the Laura Ingraham show. It's a hell of a lot cheaper than doing health insurance and dealing with a daily paycheck from some, you know, bitch from, you know, Nashville, Tennessee, and have her own show. And also we can control it a little bit better if we do this. So, you know, you look at Sean Hannity, he's so swallowed the Kool-Aid on the Rhino side, as well as Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham. It's a really sad thing. But anyway, I just thought that the Dave Ramsey going to an independent station was really interesting. Also, we had arrested in Murfreesboro in Rutherford County last Friday. We had a Berry Hill police officer that was found with child pornography, and it was speculated that he produced a lot of this child pornography. So he actually had children performing for him and videotaping.
What a lovely guy.
His name is Corporal Bob White. And, I mean, you know, of course, I do like to think of people as innocent until proven guilty.
So he's a quail.
This does.
Well, evidently.
Bob White.
Evidently, I mean, they have the memory card from his computer. They were acting on a tip, so somebody else knew. It kind of makes you wonder if it wasn't one of either the families or a victim that came forward, but the police were acting on a tip.
Or somebody who knew him online at some, you know, child porn site or something and decided, oh, he's a cop, let's can him. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where the tip came from, but they evidently they had the memory card, the images. Some of them evidently were purchased through probably the internet. I don't know how they would do. I don't know how any of that works. But some of it looks like it was not purchased and was produced locally. Yeah. So
can we call it a home video?
So hopefully, he was arrested in Murfreesboro, and as I know personally, Murfreesboro is very punishment oriented, which in this case I think is very good, especially for people in authority positions, which again in this case is very good. They've indicated that they are going to seek the maximum penalty, which is probably not what I had to do for my drug charge, but
right,
they're going after him.
So this guy lives in Murfreesboro, but he works for the Berry Hill Police Department, or worked for the Berry Hills Police.
Exactly.
Okay, so he was arrested by Murfreesboro because that's where he had the evidence.
Right, and they charged him with 5 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor.
Wow.
All right, so I will say this. It raises a question in my mind. And that is, what does it take to pass the police entrance psychological exam?
Well, he was a police officer for over, I think, 20 years. That's so this would have been
20-year-old test.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a long time since
they have to go back through psychological reevaluations. I don't know. Maybe they don't. Maybe he was grandfathered in.
This isn't Berry Hill. This isn't like.
Yes.
I would be kind of surprised if they were that involved.
Well, I mean, because that's one of my beefs with the police department. I really would like to know what the questionnaires are for the psychological exam. What kind of psychological frame of mind do you have to be a police officer? And, I would like to really know what the psychological quality you have to actually have in order to be a police officer.
Well, that's a good question.
Well, I mean, you know, have you ever seen a psychological police exam? I don't know. I've had talked to people who I thought would have made great police officers, but somehow they failed the exam. You know, it's like, well, you don't want to look at them thinking, okay, well, you know, you're you're bipolar, or, you know, you need to be on some sort of FDA-approved medicine, as opposed to maybe they are actually normal and they're looking for, you know, a certain, you know, psychological aspect of a police officer, especially with the TSA running around groping people. Anyway, go ahead.
I pulled up the law for sexual exploitation of a minor here in Tennessee. And so he was charged with 5 counts, which means they had 5 images, whether they're photos or videos, I don't know. But so 5 counts, 1 count per image or video. And according to Tennessee law, this is a Class D felony unless there's more than 50 images, in which case it becomes a Class C felony, which, by the way, is what I was convicted of. Not of the sexual exploitation of a minor. I was convicted of a first offense drug charge. And then if the individual images are more than 100, it's a Class B.
You're saying
B.
A first offense drug offense is the equivalent to sexual exploitation of a minor?
Actually, a first offense, first time drug offense is equivalent of 50 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor.
Wow.
Wow.
Why?
Yeah. And in my case, I was actually charged with a B felony. It was reduced to a C, carrying a B felony prison sentence time as part of the plea agreement. So basically, I was sentenced to the equivalent of 100 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor.
So you are equivalent to a sexual predator as a drug, first-time drug offense.
In the eyes of the court, in terms of penalty, and here's the thing, and this is really sad, and I'm not proud of what I did. I'm not saying what I did was right by any means. I'm not trying to diminish that. But I was sentenced to 8 years, and during part of that time, most of that was suspended on probation. But when I was locked up, there was somebody in jail with me who had raped, as part of a gang rape, a mentally handicapped girl. And his sentence? 3 years.
Wow.
Gang raped a mentally handicapped girl, and he got 3 years. You got 8 years for a first-time drug offense.
That's right.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, they have so broadened the line of what is considered a criminal, and there obviously are some things that men want to have the capability of doing, which is rape, so they don't get, you know, so much jail time when they actually do it. I think that's really what the problem is. I think men leave that open just in case they ended up doing that. I don't know. That's crazy. So we've got...
So you're saying men make laws to exempt themselves or to make it easier on themselves if they do it, kind of like Congress does.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a mammogram. If you thought that there was penis cancer and they told you to put your penis in this machine that was going to flatten it to see if it was going to happen, would you put your penis in there?
I might kind of like it, frankly.
Oh, hell no. Do you think that
John might.
Do you think that machine would have ever been invented by that man?
You know, I'd be willing to try it once. Come on.
No.
they don't make them small enough for John.
No. Men are creatures of convenience.
At least from one angle, it'll make it look bigger.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Give you a little more girth there.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of the movie of Tremor. No. Absolutely. I do believe that. I do believe men are creatures of convenience, and when it's not convenient for them, they truly base the laws based on their own self-question. I don't know. I don't even know what the phrase of it, but their self-doubt. Absolutely, I do believe that. I believe that if men were the mainly ones that were raped and not women, and they were the prey, I can assure you the laws would be completely different. And, you know, I guess that boils down to a different topic. You know, it scares the crap out of me that men rule the world. I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah, but how bad would it be if women did? Good God almighty. Every 28 days there'd be a nuclear war.
Right. There you go, John. Hey, thank you.
Let me tell you what. You guys are more hormonal than most women I know.
We're very hormonal because we have to put up with y'all's. God.
No, I'm over here tracing my help me line.
Uh-huh.
You're running help me on
help
the table.
Help me right on the table. Yeah, no. No. Absolutely not. You guys, you require a that-a-boy. And that's what I tell, you know, any of my younger female friends. If you when you get a husband, you have to say that a boy, just like a Labrador, that a boy. You did good. You did good.
Have you not figured out that it's easier just to shut up and not give us that attaboy because that gets old really fast?
Oh, that a
boy. That a boy.
That's what you seek.
That a boy.
You seek your mama's approval, Oedipus. Anyway, all right. Okay, so
speaking of bombs,
let's go to you know, we are a more state oriented, so I'm going to jump international here. Let's go for the hot topic of the Australian co-hosts. There's two of them, a guy and a girl, in Australia. They call in to the hospital where Kate Middleton was admitted, and which basically revealed Kate Middleton's pregnancy.
And who is Kate Middleton for the people who aren't up on?
Prince William's bitch. That's his who wife. Kate Middleton. No, yes. Not under that oligarchy. You're the bitch. You have to be on.
She's the future queen.
You have to be seriously, super psychologically screwed up to become
Queen of England someday.
Okay, Tim, how many Long Island teas has she had this morning?
Actually, I don't know. None. I haven't had any.
There's the problem. Mimosas. Quick, make her one. A really big one.
Right. Well, no, I've had my mimosas. I've had a couple.
Oh, well, that's anyway. Okay then.
We're not counting. But anyway, so we have these Australian co-hosts that call in. Okay, so the guy pretends he's Prince Charles. The girl pretends that she's Queen Elizabeth. And they call over to the hospital where Kate Middleton was admitted for, you know, severe vomiting.
And they find somebody on the phone who can't tell the difference between an Australian and a British accent, right?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, you look at those HIPAA laws and stuff like that. You know, so socialist.
Well, that's U.S. I don't know where they are.
It comes from the National Healthcare Association over in England, is what our medical system is day in day starting to prove. So, you know, so this nurse ends up violating the HIPAA law because she was dumbass enough to actually believe that the Queen of England's going to call the hospital to find out about her daughter-in-law. I mean, what a dumbass you have to be, first of all. Let's just
yes, we have
right
people
there.
For that.
Right.
You just show better respect for the dead.
Well, and then she turns around. That's it. I mean, she turns around and shoots herself. And I guess my problem I have is that Fox News and all these other news stations, they came out, they had these two co-hosts, they're to blame for her putting a gun. So what's a person from England where there's no guns allowed to get a gun to put up to her head, or however she ended up, you know, killing herself? They found her dead. I mean, where's Fox News's blame for going national with the whole story? Where's Fox News and CNN and MSNBC's responsibility when they went and put this poor nurse up there, you know, recorded conversation between the co-host of this radio station playing this joke on this nurse, and she just like sung like a bird? Where is Fox News? They let everybody know about it, but they're pointing at these people. And in a way, I kind of felt like that there was an assault on the Second Amendment. I you know, it's sad that she was going to, she probably would have shot herself or somebody.
They don't have a second amendment.
They don't, but our news organizations are talking about it.
Oh, kind of like they're talking about the football player who shot himself, kind of making that connection that guns kill them, make people kill themselves.
And what's his name? Bob Costello.
Bob Costas.
Whatever his name is. Yeah, I mean, it's this, you know, anti-gun, anti-freedom of speech. It was these two radio hosts that pushed this nurse over the edge to kill herself. And, you know, because they exercised their freedom of speech, somebody died. And I'm, like, looking at Fox News going, and they're supposed to be, you know, somewhat of a Republican, yada, yada. And I'm looking at him going, why are you assaulting my Second Amendment? If the nurse is dumbass enough to put a gun to her
First
head.
First Amendment, Melanie. First.
What are you talking about?
If you're going for freedom of speech
freedom
here.
Freedom of speech.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, yes, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Wrong amendment. You're right.
Now, when you get to the gun, that's where you got the second one.
Well, yeah, we got a lot of amendments going on
Yeah, but
here.
The British don't have those amendments, you know. So, you know.
No, they don't. They absolutely do not.
They had that thing called the Magna Carta, but it's kind of worn out.
Exactly what I was thinking.
They don't want us to have those amendments either. And, you know, we're embedded with that mind thought in this country that feel that, you know, we shouldn't. But then again, nobody in the media is pointing at themselves for making this an international story. You know, had nobody really reported it and kept it on the down low, the nurse wouldn't have felt the need that she needed to off herself and put her out as her, you know, she completely violated so many in our
Here's the thing. I don't want to say I'm going to come to her defense, but I am. I mean, you know what? People make mistakes. And it's always easier in retrospect to say, oh, well, how can that person do this? And the reality is we don't know what we would do in the exact same situation. It's easy for us to say that. But if we're busy and somebody called and says they're the Queen of England and we know that we have the future Queen of England in the hospital, you know, would we screw up and go, oh, well, yeah, and give information? I don't know. I would like to say no. But one thing has nothing to do with the other. In other words, the fact that she killed herself goes back to issues that she was having. And Fox News, in reporting this, you know, honestly, Fox News is no more responsible than those co-hosts, and
none
of them are responsible.
That's
the person's
my point.
Responsible
they
for
have
their
the
own
First
own.
Amendment
that is my-
also.
Well, exactly. That, yeah, well, that's my point. I mean, here Fox News is pointing at these two co-hosts. You know, what do you have to say for yourself, you know, kind of mentality. But it's like, wait a minute now. Fox News and CNBC, you know, MSNBC and CNN, they all need to start looking in the mirror, too. And look at it. And look, they glorified this and made this woman, you know, put her under a microscope.
Yeah, what are they trying to do? Get these two hosts to kill themselves also so they get another story?
Well, that's probably.
And then they can blame themselves.
Well, okay, so we talked about this story.
So how about we just have a mass suicide of media personalities, other than us, of course.
Well, in Australia, they won't shoot themselves, though, because they went and confiscated all the guns in Australia.
So damn.
They'd have to hang themselves. Ooh, then we can ban rope.
I don't know which one would be worse, Dad. That I want to find out. All right, so
well, you know, guns kill people, not people. And feminine hygiene products make women crazy every month. And, you know, there's all sorts of things like that.
What?
Come on, Mel. Yeah. You can say it.
Feminine hygiene products. What?
Well, you know, just following the same line of reasoning that guns kill people and knives kill people. Then obviously feminine hygiene products make women crazy.
No, it's you, baby. You make us crazy.
Oh, thank you, honey.
Crazy for you.
Crazy.
Thank you, Tim. All right, as long as there's no singing in the rain. All right, 17-year-old Antioch student. All right.
From Australia to Antioch.
Right. I'm going to throw it to Tim.
A-name.
We have a 17-year-old Antioch student, I'm guessing it's high school, Tim, and they end up doing what the media claims is an explosion.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about this in Antioch, the student, 17.
Yeah, I couldn't find this article, so please bring me up to date, if you will.
Okay, newschannel5.com reports that a 17-year-old student at Antioch High School has been charged after allegedly admitting to setting off an explosion in the bathroom as a prank. Metro Police said the 11th grader was charged in juvenile court with possession of a prohibited weapon. Police said the student confessed to putting reactive chemicals into a plastic water bottle and placing it in the restroom. The bottle exploded around 9 a.m. on Monday, prompting the school to be placed on lockdown for approximately 2 hours during the investigation.
What was he doing? The drain cleaner and aluminum foil trick?
That is exactly what I'm thinking.
That's what Jim said.
That's exactly what I said.
Oh, that's so
fun. I'm thinking of Mentos and Coke.
Well,
yeah, it's pretty much the same damn thing. It's just, well, okay, it's a chemical reaction, but it's harmless and it's fun.
Well, they didn't tell us, which I think is a clue. So
no one was hurt, and no damage. Let me say this again: no damage was reported. And you skip down to the last paragraph here. It says, "This is a quote from a parent, because parents know everything." I don't know if the kid either mishandled it or if he pushed something he wasn't supposed to. Okay, yeah, right. But he didn't bring it just to blow up the bathroom. He didn't blow up the bathroom, lady.
He didn't. The parents say him blow up explosion. There was no damage done.
Yeah, what kind of explosion leaves zero damage? There wasn't an explosion. It was no more than like filling up a balloon with too much air and it pops.
It was a water balloon. So
he probably found the items that he used right there at school: the foil in the cafeteria, yeah, the drain cleaner in the bathroom, and the water bottle out of a vending machine. It's not tough,
no,
guys.
He just took his lunch and put it in a bag and you shook it up.
I mean all it takes is
cafeteria food explosion.
And I'm not saying, obviously we're not saying on air how to make these, but I mean the reality is all you need is a couple of household items, and it's not an explosion. It is a chemical reaction, and what happens is it builds up a lot of pressure, and when the pressure builds up,
it pops the bottle.
Yep. And whether it's done with a common bathroom cleaner, which I won't say which type, and tin foil, or whether it's done with the Clorox tablets, and I believe it's Coca-Cola, or
how about a Mentos and Coke? I mean, that would explode. Just the piece of candy and
That probably would if the cap's on it. You're right.
Absolutely. And what's the charge here now for this kid?
The weapons charge.
Misuse of a candy. Mentos?
Yeah, exactly. Misuse of a candy. And that sounds like a Michael Bloomberg in New York. Kind of.
Yeah.
No, but I do believe that this is really... I'm not saying I'm condoning children going and putting cherry bombs down the toilets and
which
in
was great fun in our time.
And that actually causes damage.
Well, and that actually causes damage, and that's an American tradition.
Well,
so it's almost like an American tradition has now become actually less than an American, because there was no damage done.
Yeah, wasn't it even a line in that wonderful movie? Okay, keep going while I think. Sorry.
Well, you
Animal
know,
House, that's
know.
It. And every spring the toilets explode, every fall the fountains fill with foam, something like that.
Oh, I was thinking about holes in showers, that when you said Animal House.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
That was Porky's.
I wouldn't be surprised if this led.
Yeah, the glory hole was Porky's.
Wrong movie.
I wouldn't be surprised if this led to a ban on watching YouTube videos, because all of this stuff can be found on YouTube. Again, not that I'm telling you where to find out how to look stuff up, but I mean, this is just a perfect example of media sensationalizing.
And what do they call it? An explosion.
It was an explosion in the bathroom. They call it no damage.
And explosions are supposed to cause damage. I mean, that's the, like, you know, that's the point of the word of explosion. It's supposed to, there's supposed to be an impact there.
I'm surprised they didn't charge him with terrorism. I guess if it had happened in Murfreesboro, maybe.
Yeah.
or if he had a cross around his neck and a Bible up under his
arm. Yeah, the fact that it was probably just a Drano bomb is likely why he didn't get charged with terrorism, because there was no impact or no chance for it to cause serious damage. Now, if he had done other things, he might well have been charged with a terrorist act.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
I will say this, that if it were my child, he would be saying his prayers at night, because he wouldn't know whether mom was going to strangle him.
If it was my child, I'd be going, hey, will you teach me to make that?
Yeah, right. For me, I don't want any problems. I don't want any problems, okay? Let's not go blow things up and be a pyro for a child.
Blowing things up is a tradition around here.
Let's turn it into something positive here. You know, if it was my child, I would say, okay, you're grounded for however long, but I now expect you to make A's in science.
Yeah, put the kid in AP chemistry
class. If you can do that, I expect you to make A's in science, especially the science lab portion.
Yeah, you know,
he's
making little sodium whatever bombs in the bathroom, he should be in AP chemistry.
That's what I'm saying. He should be getting a scholarship to NASA at this point, right?
Well, you know,
they should be enrolling him in the government schools to get him to be, you know, their super genius. Right?
Make him put this knowledge that he pretends to have or that he wants to have to use. Turn it into something productive. Don't punish him. Make him learn.
Well, maybe that's how they do it. Maybe they blackmail him with his future. Otherwise, they're going to, like, lock him up for, you know, a deadly weapon.
Well, they're blackmailing every kid in America with his future.
Or he can join in on he can either comply or not comply is what I'm saying. I don't know. But we just thought that was very ridiculous. Not to say the child does not need some reprimanding or punishment, or you don't need to be going in the bathrooms and blowing things up, and that's just the way it is. And the fact that they're destroying or trying to destroy or attempting to destroy someone else's property is not a good sign.
Yeah.
And so we're not condoning it, but at the same time, does this really warrant a child to be drawn up under what kind of weapon charges is it? I'm still stunned. I can't even get it.
It just says a possession of a prohibited weapon. But this is how...
No destruction weapon.
Think of how silly this is, though. I mean, this kid was charged with a crime, right? Okay, so this kid was charged with a crime. The way things are right now... When I was in high school, I would have been arrested for so many things. I mean, I can remember in ninth grade, I won't say the girl's name, although she probably wouldn't care, probably think it's funny, but I was sat behind her in Spanish class, and I reached forward, and I popped her bra.
Oh, my God, you know, that's sexual harassment.
Under today's law, I mean, the way schools are now, I probably would have been charged with sexual battery.
Yeah.
But so would she when she finally got me back. Of course, first she slapped me, which that probably would have been, she probably would have been charged with assault for that. And the teacher thought that was pretty funny that she slapped me in and of itself. And it's just, what's really funny is the teacher happened to see her when she got me back after school, after football practice. Done, and I was in my running shorts, and she walked up, and when she went to shank me with my shorts, she happened to grab the boxers too and left me to bear all the world to see what little bit there was to see. And again, you know, under today's rules, she probably would have been charged with a crime. And it's just so ridiculous that they've gotten so caught up in being, I don't want to say controlling, but it's just ridiculous.
I think a large
it's just ridiculous.
I think a large part of the problem is that the school administrators don't want to make their own decisions. They don't want to take any matters into their own hands and deal with it on a small level where it really belongs, because they've become personally and financially liable for all these problems. You spank a kid and you've committed child abuse. You suspend a kid and the parents are just as likely as not to sue you for something or another. And so they can no longer handle these matters in the scale which is really called for. I mean, this little Drano bomb prank is just that. But they have to call the police because they are unwilling to deal with it at their own level. They have to up the ante, put it into the hands of the police, to the bomb dogs. I mean, they had bomb dogs sniffing through this school. The parents couldn't get their kids out because it was put on lockdown. And, there's one parent they quoted said, "The parents have to know what's going on with their kids. This is ridiculous. It's the last straw. I can't handle it anymore. Somebody is going to get killed inside a school. That's what my biggest fear is." And that's the attitude that gets me. Is people are escalating this all out of proportion when it could have been handled right there, right then. Give the kid detention. Give the kid, AP chemistry, whatever. Don't call the cops right. For a damn little water bottle full of Drano. Good grief.
Well, and just like the whole concept of blowback with the CIA giving weapons to people and not expecting anything to happen in return, we blow this out of proportion and make this a big deal. And, we're making the assumption it's a Drano bomb, but the fact that there was no damage kind of implies that. But anyway, we make this big deal out of it.
They didn't mention what kind of weapon it was.
It's in the news. Now, not only do children at that high school know about it, but everybody at that high school knows about it.
Well,
everybody at every high school knows about it. And guess what they're going to be doing? Trying to figure out how to replicate whatever that kid did.
Well, this article on WSMV.com has given them a pretty good start. It says, quote unquote, "He confessed to putting reactive chemicals into a plastic water bottle and placing it in the restroom. The bottle exploded at 9 a.m. That's a pretty good hint right there. Now, he could have used a lot of things out of the chemistry lab, but there were things in that bathroom he could have done it with.
Well, it's not like he walked in there with Tannerite.
Right.
Or, some sort of ammo powder.
I didn't walk in with a box of gunpowder and a fuse.
Well, if it was that simple, then they would have mentioned it.
Well,
they chose not to tell you what the chemicals were.
Yeah, because then again, they're worried about
liability.
Chemical bombs
can be bad. Chemical bombs, they can create, and I'm not going to say how, it is very easy to create very reactive chemical bombs in something as small as a water bottle or a two liter bottle. You can do, significantly a lot of damage, certainly cause a fire if you use the right chemicals. But the fact that there was no damage really seems to imply that this was nothing more than a pressure bomb designed to make a lot of noise and to be funny.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't even make a whole lot of noise. It just, it's a good poof.
Well, it just, to reiterate, the whole point of dragging the Kate Middleton, I'm so over their socialistic existence. That she ain't my princess, and but I do feel that the media is really steering things in the wrong direction. They're using very powerful words like explosion. I mean, explosion, you expect body parts to be missing.
It's not a good explosion without some chunks,
Well, if your story is that lame and that you have to, exaggerate, then maybe we shouldn't be doing the story at all.
That'd be nice, but good luck trying to control the media to that extent. And do you want to? Do you even want to? Once you start controlling them there, where's the next step?
Exactly. I mean, Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if the majority of the media were, you know, down the middle on it. But that's just not what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really nice if there was responsible reporting, but trying to legislate it or even make rules on it, not a great idea.
Well, that's it. They want me to trade my, you know, my freedoms for their for the press's version of the freedom of speech, which is completely exaggerated.
Mm-hmm. They sell papers. They sell commercials. They sell advertising by sensationalizing everything, where they're not doing anybody but themselves any good by doing so. They're causing a fair amount of harm in the process.
Yeah, right. I completely agree. Now, on another note, and this is a little offbeat to where we were, did you hear that Governor Bill Haslam decided against pursuing a state-based health insurance exchange?
What is the state-based health insurance exchange? I don't understand that.
Okay, basically, when Obamacare was set up, states have the choice of whether to set up their own exchange, basically to run their own version of Obamacare.
Their own insurance pool, basically.
Form of TIN care.
Which would be, but with the exchange, they could get insurance across state lines.
Oh, okay.
But if they set it up themselves, the federal government promised enough funds to pay for the first year.
Gotcha.
What the federal government did not say is what happens after that first.
Right.
Zero guidance. Zero guidance on what has to do to be compliant to get that money. So Governor Haslam, in his infinite stupidity, waited to the last minute. I mean, I thought it was a no-brainer from the beginning. But if the federal government wants to run or wants to make us implement a form of Obamacare, then let the federal government run it. Not that I'm a fan of the federal government running anything, but this is designed to fail. This will fail, no matter whether it's the federal government or the state government. So at least if it's going to take 3, 2, 5 years, 10 years to fail, probably more like three, but if it's going to take 2 or 3 years to fail, why not let the federal government end up paying for all of it? If it's because if they run the exchange, they're responsible for paying for it. So the fact that, and I understand Haslam's like, well, we want control and, you know, we should have a say. Yeah, but we shouldn't have to spend money on a losing proposition.
Well, there was a quote that was made, quote unquote, to me, the biggest concern will be lack of accessibility to people running the exchange, said David Brahme, a lobbyist for the insurance industry. They won't be the Tennesseans that we've been dealing with. It will be someone in Maryland. And I thought that was very interesting.
Good for okay, fine. Let them, yeah, but Maryland's going to be paying for it. Or D.C. or Washington, the federal government's going to be paying for it.
Well, what my thing on the whole health insurance thing, what would solve the whole money crisis in it is if they would open up for interstate marketing where I could get health insurance in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
or I could get health insurance in England.
Yeah.
If they're offering me the right price for the right amount of things, it's kind of like how Comcast came in here in Tennessee and dominated, and you were stuck with, you know, the high prices of damn Comcast. Well, then AT&T moved in with their fiber optics and said, move over, and all of a sudden now Comcast has had to come down in their price.
Uh-huh.
Same kind of sort of concept.
It's called competition. It's awesome.
Hello.
Yep.
I mean, we're stuck with the same old insurance companies in the same old state.
Yeah.
And if you don't like one, you go to the next, and you find yourself doing the whole damn circuit, you know. And it's just crazy. It's just what's the point of this?
Uh-huh.
So. Anyway, so I really kind of feel that Republicans really need to be pushing towards that interstate commerce.
Yeah. Yeah, competition is a good thing, and anybody who is on a free market side of things ought to be damn well for it.
And I would tell you this, too. It would probably make Obamacare obsolete.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, it would bring insurance costs way down.
Absolutely. Then all of a sudden you have the equivalency of Obamacare, but you can have your private insurance and not have the government involved.
Right.
But the government wants your information. They want to know how, you know, if you're going to be the kid that puts the pipe bomb, the cherry bomb into the toilet at Antioch High School. You know, they want to know all, and they want to know who's doing all this crap. And
well, and anytime you add a layer of federal government to anything, you drive the costs way up.
Absolutely.
Well, the Tim Clare healthcare plan.
Tim Clare. You've already like married yourself.
Congratulations, you two. A new announcement here on Tennessee Fully Exposed.
Not Melanie Sinclair, now it's Tim Clare.
Tim Clare is now officially Melanie Sinclair's bitch.
Obviously.
But the Tim Clare healthcare plan actually would involve federal regulation, but it would go more like this. Insurance companies could not sell health care plans with a lower than $1,000 deductible, which would immediately take care of all the high insurance costs of people with the PPO, P whatever O, the PP stuff, going and using their $20 copay and getting MRIs and CTs every time they got a stomach ache and have a stomach bug because, well, the doctors are scared because, you know, they don't want to get sued for malpractice because they say, oh, you have a stomach bug and it ends up being appendicitis.
Well, not to mention, so if somebody MRI every test, time, they're going to jump all over it because they get to bill for it.
Well, the imaging places, too. The doctors are the ones who always get shafted on the insurance thing.
Yeah, but I have to say that they play the game really well. They are prescribing the FDA cartel, lineup of favorite prescription drugs.
Again, they're covering the butt.
Making money off of every prescription that they make. You're giving Western medicine doctors a free ride off of this.
The doctors are the ones who get screwed the most in all this, right?
I do believe
the doctors
that they
already.
Do.
Let me put it this way: I have Absolutely. Seen the books. I have a friend who is a.
Don't be an ally to the United States because you will. Be
I'm not. I am in favor of doctors.
Are.
No, listen. I have a friend who is a vascular surgeon, which is a very skilled trade among doctors. But seriously, he's very skilled. He saves people's lives in surgery. And for an 8-hour surgery, he gets paid the flat rate of $800. Now, you think, wow, that's $100 an hour. Yeah, but he still has to pay his nurses. He has to pay for the malpractice insurance. He has to assume the risk associated with malpractice because the insurance is only going to cover so much and it's going to go up. Basically, you say $100 an hour, that's a lot of money. Yeah, he also pays, probably $500,000 to go to medical school.
Well, think about the insurance alone.
I mean, everything tied in. That is not a lot of money when you take all the expenses that he has.
I don't know about this 8-hour surgery, but I had like a 2-hour sinus surgery, and they billed my health insurance like $11,000.
Oh, right. No, they bill that, but the insurance company, if they billed him $11,000, now the hospital, here's what people don't know. The hospitals are the ones who make tons of money. The hospital insurance pays the bills, and that's because most hospital groups are owned by the same people who own the insurance companies. Doctors, however, are not owned by corporations.
They're
typically
independent contractors.
Exactly. So they're the ones who end up getting screwed out of the whole thing. The hospitals make a ton of money, but what the insurance does, the doctor bills the insurance company, say, for $10,000, and the insurance company says, okay, we'll pay you $800, okay, or $1,000. So the doctor makes 10%, and they go to the person who had the surgery and says, hey, your insurance company didn't pay the difference. Well, by the time it's all over with, the person doesn't have the money, usually. And so the doctors don't get paid, other than whatever the insurance company dictates. And if the doctors resist, they don't get paid anything. They have to take the insurance company to court, and then they don't, you know, they only get what they were going to get paid originally in the first place. So it's more expedient for the doctors to take less from the insurance company than know they're going to get paid than it is to deal with the open market, which is why, you know, the whole medical tourism thing is really, I think, about to blow up in the next year. Medical tourism, which is people going to other countries to have procedures done, like a knee surgery, or let's say a heart surgery that would cost, you know, $200,000 here, they can go to Costa Rica, which is actually a higher rated healthcare system than America's, according to
get it for cheaper,
and get it done for say $30,000 or $50,000. So medical tourism is where it's going to be going in the future. And I was checking out what was it? I think it's Axis Hospital Group, AXIS Hospital Group.com. And it looks like they're putting together something where to try and help Americans. Obviously, this is going to be for people who have money. But with this Obamacare, I think the medical tourism is about to explode.
So you have a travel agent who gives away free gallbladder removals while you're visiting Costa Rica.
Well, that's the thing. Is that, I mean, that's kind of pretty much what's going to end up happening. I mean, we're basically, you know, along with the New World Order, we're going with a New World insurance company. I'm not saying that we have to go and get insurance from India and it'd be a lot cheaper and a lot better. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case.
Although you might not be able to understand the customer service representative.
Exactly. I'm not saying that that's like the answer, but I am saying that if Maryland can offer me an insurance company and, you know, Baltimore, Maryland, or, you know, Atlanta, Georgia, or, you know, to compete within the United States, and that's what I mean by interstate. I'm not saying transatlantic. But I'm just saying that it would open up the door for competition, and I think that medical prices would go down. But then you do have the fact that they're charging $20 an aspirin because of the illegal immigrant that's coming in to have their baby within the United States. So, you know, you're having to pay $20 for a pill because there's some moron that is over, you know, feeding, is like, you know, a parasite on our healthcare system. And that's what they are. They're parasites. They are human, and I get that, and I understand the whole Christianity thing of it. I don't buy it. I think that I would rather die in a hole than to use people, period. But anyway, I digress. So, yeah,
yes,
interesting show. Interesting show. So what kind of partying does John Stein have going on these days?
Oh, my God. Well, yesterday we had a lost wallet hunting party, which was great fun. We ran out of gas on the way home. Had to get the whole neighborhood involved in our rescue, which was awesome. Took a couple of bottles of wine with us because, you know, you got to have something to keep you occupied while you're searching. Probably the port that caused me to lose it in the first place. And
hey, first names only. Who helped you in your search?
There was Dabney, and there was Crispin, and there was Jenny, and then we were rescued by Chris and my faithful friend Landon.
Wow.
So the people party. The people who were with you in the unsuccessful quest were all women, and the rescuers were all men.
Right. That's generally the way it works.
Don't make me crawl across the table and hurt you. I will.
Yeah.
But hey, at least you took off on your adventure with all women.
Hey, you know, I'm not as dumb as I look.
I respect that.
And you have a big old party this
Saturday. Oh, we've got big old parties. I am assisting a loved one in throwing her Christmas party. I'm just making a wild rice dish for her. And then the next day is another party at another good friend's house. And then the next weekend, there is lots of fox hunting activity and fun and more opportunities to drink port and lose wallets. And there may even be a big party at my house. And then another one.
Wait, when is that one?
Another one at my beloved Dorothy's house. And whew, it's just crazy around here.
Wow, it sounds like I need to be living vicariously through you.
You know, you might could even come visit. Your family might appreciate it.
Well, we were planning on that. We were planning on that this Saturday, but I got a mysterious email or text message. I didn't say you couldn't
come blow stuff up. I just said I couldn't join you.
Oh, so you don't mind if we come?
No, actually, that'd be fine with me. That'd be just fine. Everybody else does.
That might actually be a safer alternative than what we were thinking.
Yeah, well, you know, you could come down and blow stuff up, and I don't have to be here for that, really.
Yeah, they'd appreciate it if I didn't do it on my piece of property for next Saturday.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be the best location to be doing that because the fox hunters might get a bit perturbed. But, there won't be any fox hunting going on near my farm this coming weekend. So
I didn't think so. Well, Cole Beans, well, it's good to talk to you, Mike. Oh, my God.
Wow, making them names.
Well, at least you
got an alias. Now you got a real name.
Who did I dream about?
At least you got it right on the second trial when you called me my God. Yes.
Yeah, my God.
Oh, that's so wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Anyway, well, we've got John Stein.
Hello, goodbye. It's been lovely.
Yep.
And Melanie Sinclair, we're checking out.
And we're checking you out.
TN Fully Exposed.
Bye-bye.